Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Remakers, Mark. Here we are in the first edition of a brand new series of ours that we are calling What's Up, Docs. With me, as always, are my usual cast of friends here, Andy Wicks, Jeremy Nielsen, Lee, hardly knew this movie even existed, and Mark Josting. Gentlemen, it's good to have you here. I'm really excited about this discussion. Before we talk about the film itself, we want to talk a little bit about what this project means. So we decided to do a new sort of series here. So we've done our Hidden Gems, we've done our For Shame series, and this is going to be a new one where each of us are bringing a movie to the table. And in this instance, the movie is a documentary. So we wanted to feature documentaries that we and as individuals enjoy that others maybe were not aware of, or maybe some have seen, maybe not, but essentially that we want to revisit and talk about just to sort of broaden our horizons from a documentary perspective. So the one for this episode is Jodorowsky's Dune. That's spelled J-O-D-O-R-O-W-S-K-Y apostrophe S, and then Dune, like the David Lynch movie, which you will talk about in a little bit here. So that is what we are going to be discussing today. Before we get into the discussion of that, though, I would love to learn a little bit about your history with it, gentlemen. I'll start with mine very briefly. I saw this probably 5 years ago or so. It came out in 2013. The documentary is directed by Frank Pavich. It's a fantastic documentary, in my humble opinion, and we will see if everybody agrees with me, but I really enjoy it. And it was one of those movies that just had an immediate impact on me. And so when we talked about the premise of this, there were lots of documentaries that I considered, but this is the one that I thought would be most fun to discuss for a lot of reasons, because it's just so dang entertaining. So I have seen this once previously and then watched it again for a second time in this episode. What do you guys know, or what did you guys know, I should say, before we started watching this movie? Did you know anything about Jodorowsky? Had you seen the David Lynch Dune? Like, where are you at there? Andy, let's start with you.
I knew that the version of Dune that was released in the theaters, which I have never seen, but I knew that that was not well-received and was not what I think was going to be created, or what could have been created. And that was as far as I knew. Honestly, when you sent me the title for this documentary, I thought it was a documentary about the movie that got made, because I didn't know who directed it. And I was like, well, I guess we can watch a documentary about a crappy sci-fi movie, but okay. But then I watched it and obviously I was wrong. So that's what I know.
Right on. Jer, how about you?
I know that Dune is a thing, and it was a book and then a bad movie and soon to be a good movie. Fingers crossed. Yeah. I had no idea that there was a secret dark web version of this movie that never got made. And I also have no idea who Alejandro is. He was not on my radar at all.
Yeah, me either. I didn't know anything about Jodorowsky. I just had heard about the documentary and watched it just based on that. Lee, how about you? Did you know anything about any of these realms before watching?
No, I knew that there was a movie called Dune that was released in the 80s that was terrible, and that I believe Jennifer Connelly's in it. But I didn't know about Jodorowsky before this, and I'm not familiar with any of his work, so I did not have a lot of knowledge about it, but it's an interesting documentary.
Based on the footage from the documentary of his work, I am still not interested in his work.
I'll probably watch like Holy Mountain at some point, I would guess. But yeah, I'm not rushing out to it by any means. Mark, how about you? What did you know about this whole world before we got into it here?
Similarly, I was aware of the book and the film Dune, and had heard that that there is a remake coming out. But that's the extent of it. I have not seen the original movie. I have not read the book. I had not heard of Alejandro Jodorowsky.
So how many of you have seen the David Lynch Dune?
Zero.
Nobody?
I think I have seen probably about a half hour of it.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah. Man, we might have to watch that.
Have you seen it, Kyle?
I've seen it a bunch of times.
Really?
I kind of love it. Or love hate it. I'm not sure which. One of my favorite moments of all time is in the opening credits for Dune, splashed across the screen. And this will tell you almost as much as what you need to know about that version of Dune. In giant letters, it says, "Featuring original music by Toto."
Nope, I'm, in.
Like, and,
I'm in.
And Toto is like seriously the biggest font you'll ever see on screen. It is just
giant. I forgot
giant.
About that.
I am in.
Yeah, every time, man, I laugh so hard at that because I just know what's to come has Toto involved and therefore is great? Question mark? We'll see. But yes, it's worth seeing. It's probably bad, but I still like it in spite of that. And I can't really tell you why. It tickles me the right way in a way that sometimes bad sci-fi does, where you're just like, okay, whatever. I'm good with that.
My only memory of this movie, you know, back closer to when it came out was in the local newspaper. They did like a write-up about, like, I think one of the girls basketball teams or something like that. And they, you know how they have like a little bio of everyone and they answer these questions, like what's your favorite food and all that stuff. And one of them was, what's the worst movie you've ever seen? And they all put Dune.
They must have went as a team. Yeah. Oh, that's an awful team building activity.
Yeah.
Oh, let's go watch an obtuse, dense science fiction movie directed by a weirdo director who's never made sci-fi before. Cool. Let's do it. You know that like one of their dads was a theater owner. He's like, nobody's watching Dune.
Yeah.
You guys go in there.
It built camaraderie.
Yeah. Yes, indeed. Indeed. All right. Perfect. Well, thank you for sharing that. Now let's go on and talk about Jodorowsky's Dune, the documentary we are discussing today. So we're kind of breaking this down into three pieces. One is Jodorowsky himself and the people who he surrounded himself with in the making of this film, which have some unreal stories. The second one is kind of the origin story of the book and the making of the film. And then the third piece we want to talk about is the documentary itself and thoughts we have on that. And then finally, we'll end it with a rating, kind of like we have. So let's start a little bit with the main aspect of this, which is Jodorowsky himself. So Alejandro Jodorowsky it was a very avant-garde filmmaker. Where was he from? I just totally spaced it. Does anybody remember?
He's from Chile.
Chile. And so he made these very avant-garde films, El Topo, Holy Mountain, that kind of, it's one of those things where nowadays, if someone was making super weird art films like that, they would never get handed a major studio film like right away. But just by virtue of his talent, his willingness to kind of go there, and that being back in the time where that was like endorsed, like there's no reason why David Lynch should have done Dune or got offered Return of the Jedi. Other than that, he was interesting. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. It's just a strange thing. I just feel like today is a very different world. There are some instances of that happening, but not a lot. And so it just feels very strange to me. So he has this very avant-garde mind, and he has this mind that is so passionate. And that was the thing that really got me the first time I watched this movie. There are some things, whether it be a movie, a person, a songwriter, a performance, that after, sometimes in the middle of it, but mostly afterwards, after I'm kind of coming down from it, I'm actually kind of angry. But I'm angry in a way where I'm like, it's like jealous and envy and wishing that I could do that. And I'm like angry that someone did that and it wasn't me. And that's what this movie did. It just like, it stirred my creative juices so much that it kind of was like, oh, I just like, I want to make my vain, dumb, greedy, like art picture, whatever that is. Right. Like, I didn't even know what it was. It doesn't matter. But it's like, I want to do that. Like, he makes that sound so much fun. And you know, the movie never got made, spoiler. So when you're watching Jodorowsky's Dune, the you know, punchline is that this movie never got made. It almost got made, but because of all these steps along the way, the movie didn't actually happen. They basically ran out of money, ran out of investors, ran out of studios. And so there is a reason for that, all of which this movie goes into discuss. But that's what makes it so great, is the journey that it went there. You know, like sometimes the journey is greater than the end result, and I feel like this is potentially the case. It doesn't mean that the movie wouldn't have been great, but I'm so glad that we got to know about this story through this documentary and what went into that and who this man was, because it just like, it made me want to be that auteur, to be that crazy filmmaker guy, to have those crazy stories about the people that I tried to get involved with it, right? All those things. Like, it just, and I'm not that guy at all. Like, I don't have that in me at all, but this movie made me want to have that as part of who I am. Like, it's so crazy. So that's Jodorowsky's Dune. It's a story of the man, how he got where he was in Hollywood, and how he tried to make this movie of Dune, which is one of the most beloved science fiction movies of all time, or sorry, science fiction books of all time, and the path that he took to get there. How did you guys feel? Did you have a similar feeling to that? Am I the only one that was like, just like creatively juicing the goose by this?
I was kind of the opposite in a lot. When the documentary started, and it starts with Revan, I can never say his name. And
Douglas,
he's talking
Vindig Refn.
Yeah. Who's a great director in his own right. And he basically says, like, I read his book, this magical book, and it was unreal, and it would have changed the world had it gotten made. And you're like, oh man, like, what is this? And then you get into it, Alejandro's passion is just so insanely addictive, and just he's pulling these people in. And then all of a sudden you realize, like, there's no way that he's going to make this. And it just, to me, it just started getting more and more sad as it went along, as you realize that he is just reaching so far beyond what is actually capable in filmmaking, I don't know. To me, it was really fascinating and exciting, but it was also just like, what are you doing, man? Like, I don't know.
Yeah, it did set itself up for very high stakes from the get-go with that. That is very true. Anyone else have feelings along that way, or was it a little more neutral for you all?
I had a similar reaction to Jer in that just watching him tell the story 35 years after the events, after they happen, and he's still so, like, he can hardly sit still and tell the story. He gets so excited about it. That to me was entertaining and intriguing, and kind of kept me coming in. The moving shots where they're taking the storyboard that was written and kind of creating these opening montages and these scenes, these moving scenes, those were all incredible. And they seemed really, really interesting and kept me wanting to know, like, ooh, this could have been really, really neat. But then as he's describing the story and kind of telling how he wanted things to happen, to me felt like here's his avant-gardeness coming out, where it was becoming less of, I found it really creative and interesting, and more of like, okay, now he's just kind of getting a little too weird for my taste. And then when he describes what he did to the story, which he uses incredibly graphic and unpleasant terms, but he says it with a smile on his face also, to me it was a little, not a little bit, that was a big old turnoff. But still, the gravity that this man had, that he pulled all these amazing creators into his orbit, these people that just seemed, the people themselves seemed like characters from a story. These artists that he pulled in, the actors that he intended to fill all these roles, each of them were almost larger than life in a story. So all that to say, the story of the story to me in this documentary, I think, was incredibly interesting to me, and probably better than I think the movie would have been.
Yeah, I would agree with you on that. I think that's probably very true. I think it's easy to think about what could have been, but ultimately it didn't get made, and for very good reasons, most of which are discussed in this movie. I don't mean to make light of something that definitely has real world parallels and real world troubles, but it kind of made me realize why people become members of cults. Like, the way that he spoke was so invested and was so he believed it so much that it kind of made me want to believe it at the same time. You know what I mean? And like, thankfully this was about a movie that he was making, right? It was fairly innocuous in the larger, the greater world. So I didn't have to be like, yes, his beliefs on religion or his beliefs on, eugenics or whatever, like things that I'd be like, whoa, hold on. So thankfully, right, it was not that, but it's kind of one of those things where I could see like how you can get invested or how someone can sway you in that way. And I don't think that I'm at risk of that, saying that out loud. I probably should defend myself in that a little bit, but it was just very interesting to see that kind of path. Jerry, you talked a bit about his artistic vision and how he kind of wanted to change the world. Do you want to just talk a little bit about what that was in the documentary and kind of what that meant, and then what you felt about that?
Well, I guess I would just echo what you had just said, that they even said it a few times in the in the documentary that getting involved in this project was like getting involved in a cult. They use that language, and how he would get up every morning and give this big rousing speech to get everybody, you know, all the juices flowing and everybody pumped up and inspired. And he from the get go, and as he talks about it now, even he wasn't trying to make a movie, more as he was trying to make art, and he was trying to make this vision into reality. And I think ultimately that's probably why it failed, sadly, or one of the reasons. But it was just an interesting character study on him as a person, and how people just sort of these insanely talented artists and performers and just this artistic community just sort of flocked to him in a way that you would have thought, oh, Salvador Dali is going to be involved. Oh, that's amazing. That's incredible. And oh, wait, also Pink Floyd and Mick Jagger. Yeah, no, why, how is this not like the most amazing thing that has ever happened? But somewhere along the line, it's sort of like the art part of it and the Hollywood part of it never fully meshed, but just the character study of him as this inspirational artist was just so, that was probably my favorite part of this documentary.
It almost seemed that he was more interested in creating like the world's most interesting party with most interesting guests than a movie. You know what I mean?
Totally.
Yeah. It's like he did. It felt like one of our episodes remaking a movie where we just get this all-star bizarro cast, except he actually did it. Like, who should play this? Oh, Mick Jagger. Okay, hey, Mick Jagger, will you play this? Yeah, okay, I'll do it. You know who should do the music? Pink Floyd. Like, it was just insane that then he just picked names out of a hat that he thought would be the perfect people, and then they were on board for it.
Hey, Fat Orson Welles, I'll get your favorite chef to cook for you every day. You in? Awesome. Great.
Yeah. Yep. And I love how he described like the character that Orson Welles was to play and why he'd played them. And I'm pretty sure he told Orson Welles as much, and it didn't matter. Like, he was just like, okay. Like, it's just that same thing where it's like, I can believe that Orson Welles, you know, Andy, at one point you said like, I don't know if all these stories are true, but I sure hope they are. Like, they're so crazy that I want them to be true as well. And I think they're probably true-ish, but like, I can see why that energy, why someone would agree to it, even though it sounds almost too good to be true and too crazy. You know, I wonder how many movies, like how many directors there are out there that start with films like this. Like, how many stories are there like Hodorowski's Dune for filmmakers who tried to make something and then didn't for whatever reason? How many of them end up being tapered back to 20% of what the original concept was, 40%, 60%? You know, you talk about like uncompromising auteurs like Stanley Kubrick or, you know, Tarantino, maybe somebody like that, Scorsese, right? Where they get Final Cut, they get the resources they need, but like, even they're not 100%, right? And he was trying to get 100% of what he wanted. Like, he was not willing to compromise, which means that the movie didn't get made, right? Like, that's exactly why that didn't happen. But it's interesting to reflect on kind of the larger Hollywood picture, the filmmaking world, and, you know, what that looks like in reality for people that live in reality, which he clearly does not.
He was like George Lucas times 100.
Yes. <Yeesh. laughs> That's dangerous.
And talking about the stories of how he connected with all these people, that part to me just felt a little bit like, there's no way that just keeps happening. Like, oh, we should get Mick Jagger. And then I was in a hotel. And who do I see but Mick Jagger? And he like decides to come on my movie. Like, that, he tells that basic premise of finding somebody like four times.
Yeah. I was at a party and then Mick Jagger parted the company and walked to me.
Mm-hmm. And then I wanted Salvador Dali, and I was at a restaurant and there was Salvador Dali, and mm-hmm. like, it's just the same thing kept happening over and over again, which okay, maybe.
I want it to be true though. I really do.
Yeah, I hear you. I do like how he wins out over giant egos, like how he basically fleeced Dali out of who knows how many hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Yeah.
by basically having a different definition of what he meant. So in the movie, Salvador Dali is going to play one of the characters, and he says, I want to be the most well-paid actor ever. I want to have $100,000 from every minute. And the studio was
$100,000 per day.
Per day. No, I think it was like per minute. Per minute.
No, that's what they ended up.
Oh, no, you're right. You're right. That's what it ended up being. You're right.
Selling them
$100,000 a day. And so, and they eventually agreed to $100,000 a minute of screen time, not of acting time, but of screen time. And he was on screen for like 90 seconds.
Or he was. They were going to like make a dummy of him and use that instead.
It's so good. I love it.
And then Dolly said he would only come on if he got the dummy afterwards, too.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. I forgot about that. Oh, so good.
They're trying to out-weird each other.
I know.
Yeah.
Yep. Well, they even talk about that. Like, they talk about just this whole weird avant-garde art community, and he has to go win Dolly over, and Dolly has to win him over, and it's just this, it's just this weird life that I have no concept of, and I can't even imagine.
I kind of picture it a little bit like the Andy Warhol universe, where like he surrounded himself by the people that he was most interested in and then like put them out into the world, like, you know, Nico, David Bowie, like all these people that he just absolutely adored and loved, and then just like put them into stuff, whether they were ready for it or not. And then that just became like the definition of what he then was and what his art then was. Like, it didn't change what it was going to be. It certainly changed what it could be, I guess. But, you know, the fact that they had Dali's partner, the woman with whom he worked most closely or lived with, as like one of the female characters, he's like, eh, it's fine. It's worth it. Right. Like, to be so uncompromising. And then for that to be like, eh, that's fine. You know, it's just, yeah, it's kind of unbelievable. We'll touch on the documentary a little bit. And we talked about this when we were kind of getting ready to record here, but the documentary does a good job of sort of balancing the absurdity of his person and of his quotes with some of his previous work. So in one of his other movies, I think it was Holy Mountain, I want to say, the character who's kind of Jesus-y, I guess. Again, having never seen it, I don't know, but it gets a little bit of that allegory in there. At one point, like, poops a gold poop. And it's absurd as it seems. Like, it's just this little spiral of gold, right? It's awful and weird. But they use that and juxtapose it with some of the things that he was trying to do. Like, how could he get away with this and be considered this, you know, brilliant director? And then that led to him being like this. So, like, it's, you know, those two things are tied together, just the absurdity and the strangeness of that. I appreciate that they did that. And it was definitely with a sense of humor that they did that. They weren't, you know, they weren't ripping on Jodorowsky. I think there's a lot of love towards the man and towards his filmmaking. So let's talk a little bit about the film that was to be. So we've talked a little bit about casting, and we'll do just a brief overview to kind of summarize what we've talked about so far as casting. So in this movie was going to be music by Pink Floyd, art
and a French like,
oh yeah, and
military,
a French
metal band.
They were German, weren't they?
Were they?
They were German, like a German industrial band, like art industrial band. And then it was going to have Orson Welles, Salvador Dali, Dali's girlfriend. Who else? Who am I missing?
Jagger.
Mick Jagger.
Yep.
His son.
His son. Yep.
Jodorowsky's son.
Yeah. Jodorowsky's son.
Andy Warhol's guy.
Yep.
Man, David Carradine.
David Carradine. Oh my God, that story about David Carradine and the bottle of vitamin E.
Yeah.
You gotta see this movie, but it is so funny how David Carradine basically chugs like in the 1980s, a $60 bottle of vitamin E, like it's Tic Tacs or something. And he's like, that was $60 of vitamin E. Like, it's so funny. The movie has so many good stories. So anyways, we're talking about ambition and over ambition, and this reeks of it in the casting. It also is that way in the making of the film. I actually really appreciate, so I really love movies that talk about the filmmaking process just in general, right? I love seeing, you know, how the sausage is made. Sometimes that's really hard because you see more than you want to see. But this one I think was really fascinating, largely due to the persons with whom he worked. So one of those was a French artist named Moebius, Moebius. I can't remember his real name, but he's a fairly well-regarded kind of comic book artist and concept artist. And so he...
Jean Giraud.
Thank you. So he was on, and the same kind of thing where he was like, I like his work. I'm going to work with you. And then the guy's like, okay, all right. And then also he saw H.R. Giger's work. So H.R. Giger, you will know best probably from the Alien series. So he designed the Alien, you know, kind of headpiece and the tendrils. So all of the Alien universe, he's done a fair amount of other stuff. What other movies am I missing, guys? What else did they talk about? Can you remember any other ones?
He's done a lot of monsters, and yeah. You know, I'll be damned if I can come up with any on the spot.
But. I know, I'm blanking too. Don't do it at work, but do a Google image search for H.R. Giger and you will be like, oh, yep, okay, got it. So he wanted one of the family's worlds in the Dune universe to be designed by H.R. Giger. And so he got him on board. It's just like lining up all these people. Dan O'Bannon, who ended up writing Alien, who was a well-regarded science fiction guy, he turned down Douglas Trumbull, who had just done the effects for... because he didn't like him. Like, he was really standoffish. He basically said, we will not work together. It is like that. And it's just like, boom, done. Like, sorry, Douglas Trumbull, I don't approve of you. And that's it. Like, that takes balls and craziness. But wow, I couldn't believe it. So, it's just a lot. They were going to throw a lot into this movie. What did you guys think about not just the cast, but like everybody that surrounded him and kind of how that felt with all of this together?
The most remarkable part about me, well, my favorite part about this documentary was seeing all of this art. And it was incredible. Everything from Foss's, like, spaceships and stuff to Giger's work. Like, it was all just amazingly beautiful. And the thing that I came away with in watching the documentary is how he assembled like a really outstanding cast of characters, both as actors, but even more so in the production, in the building of this world. And they all kind of, they weren't super well known at the time from what I was gathering, but they sort of came out of this project and all kind of just blew up and went on to do Alien and all these other things. And he knew where to find people that had that sort of spark of what did he call them, spiritual soldiers or whatever,
spiritual warriors.
Yeah, he knew how to find those people, and he gave them the ability to, he just let them loose to just be themselves and to sort of foster that artistic gift that they all had. And that's incredible. And to see where they all went and how far reaching their work has been since then is pretty amazing.
Yeah, that's a good call. That's something that I haven't discussed so far, is a lot of the documentary talks about the passion that went into this, but then how this meteorite burned up coming into the atmosphere, but then all of these other smaller meteorites went out into the world and the incredible creative things that came of that. So that's a good call out. We hadn't really touched on that far, and I really appreciate where they went with that. You know, they talked about how Star Wars got made, how Alien got made, right? All these different things where these big, huge action movies and big, huge science fiction movies, you know, might have existed, but might have looked a lot different without this movie having been kind of, you know, breaking up in the reentry sort of environment.
Yeah, I love that segment where they talk about all the other projects that were kind of spawned off of this. And the thing that we haven't said so far is that even though the film Dune wasn't made, they ended up with what was the world's best produced storyboard.
Yeah,
and we get a lot of. We got a lot of shots of the storyboard and the scenes from there compared with movies that actually were made, and you know, we can see how the strong influence. It really is incredible.
Yeah, that touches on some things that I really appreciate about the documentary. So we'll kind of blend these two together a little bit, but just how, so there's this giant book. I mean, it is like calling it a coffee table book would, you know, involve a very sturdy coffee table, but it's like, I don't know, 5 inches thick by 18 inches wide, probably. And it's storyboards and concept art. And it's basically the entire movie that Mobius drew from Jodorowsky, just like saying, it will be this, it will be this, it will be this. And they storyboarded the entire film before they ever filmed any of it. And so this book, there were, what did they say, 10 of them that were probably made and distributed to various studios, and two of which still are in existence, I think. One... at Hodorowski and one at one of the studios, I think. But they refer to that a lot, and they, you know, certainly scanned that, and they took that and then, you know, using special effects wizardry, like animated the storyboards in a way mm-hmm. that showed what the movie would be like. I love that they did that. It made it more tangible. Yeah. Looking at storyboard art and looking at concept art is very interesting. You know, they did a good job of putting pictures of Harkonnen next to Orson Welles, right? So you can see like, oh, okay, Orson Welles was kind of giant and Harkonnen is kind of giant. So, okay, that makes sense. And Mick Jagger next to, I can't remember the Sting character from the David Lynch one, but his character, you know, that stuff was good, but I think that's pretty common in documentaries like this. But the way that they animated that, the way that they like really brought you into those storyboards, because they're pretty, I mean, they're not like Pixar storyboards, right? They're not animatics. They're very sparse. It's very much line drawing. So to have a little bit more context to that, a little bit more action to that, I thought was really cool.
Yeah. The animation really brought it to life. It was very enjoyable to watch.
Yeah. I enjoyed the LSD sort of peyote scene when he takes that really strong pot Dan O'Bannon, I think,
yeah,
took some with him, and they have like very much a sort of a psychedelic trip sequence that was animated that was amazing too, like just him telling the story and have it be sort of animated as he's telling it in this trippy way. That was really cool too.
That story was bizarre.
Yes.
I want to just make a quick correction to something we said earlier. Giger is not German. He was Swiss.
Swiss. That's right. Good call. One of the points that I made when I was putting down pre-production stuff is there are some people who you hear about and don't know what they look or act like, but then when you do see them, they are entirely different. H.R. Giger is not one of these people. When you look at Giger's art, you think like, God, this guy must just be like creepy and slimy and like just not right. And that is 100% true. Like he is so creepy. I said earlier that like I sort of half expected him to like reach off screen for something, like he's going to grab a water and then come back with like a human arm or something that he's just like has around just cause, like, it's, yeah, I think he's dead now, but I'm sure he probably was a lovely gentleman in some ways, but man, is he creepy.
He passed away in 2014, and there's a picture of him from 1980 at an Oscar ceremony. He won an Academy Award, and I did not look up for what he won the award, but he is wearing a tuxedo and still looks incredibly creepy.
Yes.
Farrah Fawcett with all, you can tell it must be for some special effects because it's Farrah Fawcett in her peak Farrah Fawcettness next to a bunch of nerdy looking dudes in tux. And then there's Giger who just looks like he's about to rip out your soul. Yes.
1980. Would that have been for Alien?
It probably was.
Oh yeah. That makes sense. Maybe they righted it with him by then. Crazy. What else did you guys like about the documentary as a whole? Not just the film itself, but the documentary too. I mean, I feel like the interviews are really good. Like I liked the editing choices that they made in that. What else did you guys dig?
Yeah, I just echo the really great use of the storyboards and the animation. I thought it was funny at the end that once you sort of get to the, and then it wasn't made, wah, wah, part of the documentary, and then he's still just like bursting at the seams with passion. And he's like, so I didn't stop. And I made comic books. And I think somebody should make it into an animated movie. And like, you just see that he didn't take it as a failure. He took it as how can I continue to make this vision go? But I love that they are just taking what is essentially a rough comic book and actually making it into comic books.
Yeah.
I also really loved that when he went to see the Dune movie and he's like sitting there tense and then he's like, and then it stunk and it was so great.
He called it the S word. It was S word. It was pure.
He was so
S-word.
Happy. It was terrible.
I was so happy. It was terrible. And somehow you can't be mad at him. Like most people, when you say that, be like, screw you, man. Like that there was a lot of effort in it, but at the same time, you're like, all right, Hodor. All right, Alejandro. Like, I'll give you that, I guess. Like again, same thing. He gets away with a lot, I guess.
He reminds me of Roberto Bernini.
Yeah,
like
totally.
His level of energy.
Yeah, that's a good call. Interesting. I hadn't thought about that, but I like that.
I was just going to ask the question or a couple questions. Like, how much of Dune actually got made? Like, were they filming Were they in production, or was it still in this sort of storyboard creativity, drawing people in stage?
I thought Dan O'Bannon said that they were essentially at the point where they were ready to start shooting, or no, building sets, he said. And yep. They got the call that the project was shut down.
Yeah, they were about to fly to Algeria, I think, to start shooting, but...
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah, they never got there.
So there's not a minute of actual footage of this thing.
Nope.
No.
It makes me wonder, like, was this as simple as just they didn't have any money and the studios were just so weirded out by what was going on that it just got closed off? I was comparing it in my head to Terry Gilliam's attempt to make the Don Quixote movie. And
yeah.
And just how fraught with problems that whole thing was, just over and over and over again. Like it was trying not to be made. This doesn't seem to have that. This just was like, it was just too big. It was too much, and it was too out there. And so it wasn't necessarily like, oh, the set burned down, or this main actor became an alcoholic or whatever. Like it was, everybody was on board for it. It just seemed like the project itself was just too huge.
And they recount that when they were shopping their big book around to the studios, that the studios' responses were like, we love everything except for the director. So they, if it wasn't Jodorowsky, then they would have been on board. Of course, if it wasn't Jodorowsky, none of that would have happened.
Right.
He was the toxic element there in the eyes of the studio.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know how they could have diluted that movie, right? Like, what's the 20% version of that movie? I mean, maybe it is Lynch's Dune. Like, it's very hard to say what that is, but I don't think that Jodorowsky would have allowed that. You know, like, I think he's too stubborn to allow anything other than the complete vision of what that was. And I'm sure it wasn't just, like, Jagger and Wells and Dali. Like, I'm sure he probably would have compromised on that, but I don't think that ultimately that was probably what broke the bank. Certainly was, you know, not cheap, but I feel like it was everything else around it. And just the reality of making that movie, I feel like probably just caught up to them in a big way.
So do you guys think if this had been made in 100% uncompromising on everything, would it have been successful? Would it have been good?
I vote no.
It would not have been successful. I think it would have been good, but I don't know if it would have been what was presented in this movie as revelatory as it is. I think it probably would have been a good movie, just in terms of the audacity of it. But I can't see how it would have become Star Wars. You know what I mean? Like the premise right. was that this movie was Star Wars before Star Wars was going to be it. And that just was not the case. Like, they're just so different. I can't see how this story, with the origins that it has, with the story that it has, would get the traction that something like Star Wars does, which is based on, you know, 30 serials like Flash Gordon that already proved to be successful, that are very appealing. You know, there's a lot of Dune fans, don't get me wrong, but it's not mass entertainment like Star Wars was.
This was too ahead of its time, too far forward.
Yeah. Lee, I liked your point about how it should have been like a miniseries or something like that.
Yeah, well, he talked about at one point, you know, the studio saying this has to be 90 minutes. And he's like, no, it's going to be, you know, it could be 3 hours, it could be 10 hours, it could be 20 hours. And it's like, yeah, that's not a movie, that's a miniseries.
Yeah.
And that's also not how to sell the studio on your movie.
Yes, exactly. No surprise there, basically, from what we know. All right, so let us move on to our rating of the documentary itself. So we're not rating the Dune that could have been, but rather we're rating the documentary Jodorowsky's Dune. We will do our usual 1 to 10 scale, 1 being worst documentary I've ever seen, 10 being greatest documentary I've ever seen, and the scale of your choosing. So let's do it as normal. Let's do Andy first.
Yes.
I really enjoyed watching this documentary, and I'm going to give it 8.9 golden poops.
Nice. You stole mine, but that's low-hanging poop fruit.
You give me the first one, that's what I'm going to take.
That's fair. That's very fair. Jeremy Nilsson, How about you? What is your rating and your scale?
I really enjoyed this. It was a topic that I had no idea about, but it was also very interesting. I thought it was a little long. I like my documentaries just to come in at around the hour mark, I guess. But it was really fascinating. I would give it 7.3 tongues that also are landing pads for spaceships.
Nice. La, 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 la. Come to me,
he
airplane.
He did that noise way too much.
So I'll go next. I love this documentary. Now, I've talked about why I love the way that it was made. I love the energy that it brings up in me. I guess it's my cult. I don't know. That's still a little bit weird. But I will give it... I like that we're going really weird. These aren't like 7.5s or whatever. I'm going to give it 9.1 Spiritual Warriors. It's a darn good doc. Lee, how about you? What is your rating and scale?
I enjoyed the documentary. I thought it was really well made. And I had absolutely no expectations going into it. And I found myself being very, like, you know, engaged and wanting to see what was going to happen next. So I thought it was a really good story. So I will give it 7.33333 Orson Welles Parisian personal chefs.
Nice. Love it. And finally, Mark, how about you? What is your rating and scale?
Well, I also think this is a great documentary. I'm going to give it a 9.05 overqualified storyboard artists.
Nice. Mobius. Love it.
I like that he only goes by that in sci-fi things.
Yeah. That's so cool. Well, thank you for going on this journey with me, John. I'm so glad that you got to see it and that you really liked it. You know, certainly there are some things that are a little bit hard to like about the person about whom the movie talks about. That was terrible grammar. Sorry. It's getting towards the tail end of the recording here, and I'm not quite as good as I am at the start. Our next documentary is going to be chosen by Lee. Lee, what do we have next in store for our next What's Up Docs series?
My choice for documentary is has nothing to do with filmmaking, but it's a documentary that talks about, at the start, talks about the case of the woman who spilled hot coffee on herself from McDonald's and then sued McDonald's.
I remember this.
Yes.
Successfully sued McDonald's.
Yes, and the documentary is appropriately named Hot Coffee.
Cool.
Excellent. Right.
I have not seen that. That's what I'm excited for.
And that's how it starts out, but it ends very differently. So it's an interesting story.
Cool.
All right.
I'm excited to check it out. Awesome. Well, thank you, gents. This was really fun. Next up, we will be publishing our episode on Tombstone, which will be our next regular episode. So excited about that. And then after Tombstone, we will go into our discussion of hot coffee. So excellent. I'll talk about hot coffee anytime. I love hot coffee, you know, sometimes more than others. But yeah, looking forward to it. Until the next time, gentlemen, may the force be with you.
And also with you.
Orson Welles Parisian personal chefs.
Nice. Love it. Everybody okay? Microphone get knocked down?
Yeah, that was me. We're all fine here. We're good. How are you?